Coming from the lower eight in San Francisco, it's the Are You Serious Show.
Are you serious?
I'm Are You Serious, and this is my show. Welcome back once again to the Are You Serious Show. We are back, and there's a number to this show, and the number is a mystery to me. But if you go to our website, instead of just listening to the damn shows, you know, on your iTunes thing, if you actually go to our damn website and see that there are other shows there on MondoGlobo.net, you'll see what number show this is, and you'll see all the other fine shows there on MondoGlobo.net, and you will subscribe to MondoGlobo.net, and then you won't have to go back to the website again except to see what number show it is. So it's kind of a circular thing. Anyway, we're really happy today because we are going to be talking to the two fellows. They've been in quite a bit on talk shows and here and there with this fascinating book, Why Do Men Have Nipples?
And you know why, right?
I read the book.
Give that away already this early in the show?
I read the book, but I forgot already. But it's a fascinating, fascinating book.
Fabulous book.
And, it'll be a thrill to speak with Mark Lehner and Billy Goldberg. I actually have spoken with Mark Lehner in the past. But before I talk a little bit about Lehner, I'm going to bore you a little bit by mentioning my Question Authority course one more time. Maybe once or twice, and it is at maybelogic.com, and I'm not going to bore you by going on and on about it, but there is an interview with me that will be on Deke Magazine, deekmagazine.com, and by the time you're hearing this show, I think it will be up. I'm not sure about that. Right now, there's a big picture of Henry Rollins there and a conversation with him. I don't know if I can replace Henry Rollins or if I will, but I might be somewhere on that site, and as a
you'll be in good company.
As a C-list or D-list celebrity somewhere beneath Henry Rollins. And who hasn't dreamt about being somewhere beneath Henry Rollins?
Overshare.
Many have. And, we're going to talk to these guys about why do men have nipples. I do have a complaint. The book never arrived. And this happens so much now in the book industry. These publishers don't do anything really to promote books except send books out. And they fail in that task about one out of every three times. Fortunately, there's one of these digital versions of the book that you can buy for like $10. So I splurged.
Nice.
And I bought it, but you can't print it. You can print it if you're at a hotel using a wireless, and the hotel has a printer service particularly for this, then you can print it. So I suppose if you're wealthy enough to be staying at a
Ritz-Carlton,
very, ritzy hotel, then you can print these things out. But anyway, I did get to read the book and take a few notes. And Mark Lehner, I mean, it's funny to see this guy all over the media because Lehner, some people know, has written some of the most hilarious, cracked out, freaked out, crazy stuff. No, I shouldn't say cracked out. He's actually a bodybuilder. He's probably a health freak.
Very healthy individual.
But he does write brilliantly hilarious stuff, including quite possibly my favorite novel of the 1990s, Et Tu, Babe, in which Mr. Lehner starts Team Lehner at his own private Führer bunker, and things go from there. His last novel was actually all the way back in 1997, and it was called Tetherballs of Bougainville, and I'm going to read the beginning of it for you. My father is strapped to a gurney, about to die by lethal injection when the phone rings. Everyone, wardens, lawyers, rabbi, dad, looks at the red wall phone. That's the one that rings when the governor calls to pardon a condemned convict. But when it rings a second time, they realize that it's not the old-fashioned tintinnabulation of a wall phone, but the high-pitched electronic chirp of a cellular. I reach into my jacket pocket and answer, "Hello, it's my agent." "What's up?" Everyone's giving me that indignant glare, like, "Hey, we got an execution here." "Why?" Which I deflect with the international sign for "Bear with me, please," the upraised frontal palm gestured closer to the Hollywood Indian's gesticulation salutation than to the traffic cop's stop, which is more peremptory and thrust further from the body. I'm nodding. That's great. Okay, I'll talk to you later. I slip the phone back into my jacket. "Good news?" my father asks. "Yeah, kind of," I reply. "It looks like I'm going to win the Vincent and Lenore Di Giacomo Ashimisuto Polymers America Award." "What's that?" the doctor says, retaping the cannula in my father's arm and sliding the IV drip stand closer to the gurney. "It's a very prestigious, very generous award given every year for the best screenplay written by a student at Maplewood Junior High School. It's $250,000 a year for the rest of your life." "Jesus fucking Christ," Dad exclaims. "Mazel tov," says the rabbi. "Whoa, hold on, folks," I say. "There's one big problem here. There's no screenplay. I haven't written word one. I don't even have a title yet." The warden, an absolutely stunning woman in a décolleté evening gown, eyes me dubiously. "How do you win the award if there's no screenplay?" "That's the advantage of having a powerful agent," I say. Everyone nods in agreement. "Trouble is, I got to get this movie written soon. Shit, I could really use a title. I can't write without a title, you know? I've got to be able to say myself, I'm working on such and such." "How does, like lemon-lime sport drink for Cara protein bar strike you?" the executioner says. I thought of that myself, I say, but it's a little bit too close to like water for chocolate. "Mark, what about Double Life, the shattering affair between Chief Judge Saul Wachter and socialite Joy Silverman?" the warden suggests. "Too long." Dad pipes up. "I've got a title," he says decisively. "What?" "Eventually, even Mighty Mouse is vivisected by the dour bitch in the white lab coat." So, anyway, that's the opening of Tether Balls of Bougain. And have you all read any of Mark Lehner's works?
I have not.
I've read bits.
He's a very funny man, and we'll be talking to him and his doctor friend.
That's right.
Soon. And welcome to the Gang of Three. Once again, Jeff Deal is here, because he absolutely has to be. He lives here, and he's not allowed out without his ankle bracelet on. So there he is. And we have Diana Brown. Welcome, Diana.
Hello. How are you?
Welcome. Come right in. You can't afford to miss this. Step right up.
No, I was looking forward to today because I saw something really interesting on Boing Boing, and I think you have read it as well, but I want to share it. Apparently the Vatican is very interested in extraterrestrials, so much so that a Jesuit brother, an astronomer at the Vatican Observatories, has written a book called Intelligent Life in the Universe. And now this posits a lot of questions, but my favorite is Jesus Christ's redemptive valid, well, okay, is the redemption of Christ for humans valid for extraterrestrials? I mean, are they going to be grandfathered in under this rule?
And this is a good question, I think. It's possibly actually the most absurd question I've ever heard in my life. And of all the absurd discussions that we've had on this show, this is probably the most ludicrous, human-centric, earth-centric,
well, you know,
Christ-centric.
This gentleman is not the only person at the Vatican, or
now my assumption is that, you know, to us we might seem about like to them, we might seem about like cockroaches.
Exactly, very remedial.
Right, and rather than wondering whether we're bringing the word of God or redemption, you know, they're going to wonder whether to eat us or just remove us like vermin so they can
You to feel calmed, because this gentleman has a compatriot, a former retired theologian, a Monsignor Corrado Balducci, and he has gone on Italian TV recently and assured us that extraterrestrials are not evil and they are not here to eat us. But he goes on to say that they are not going to be challenging Christianity and God us. Christianity knows it in this country, well, in this world, but that they're going to fall right in step, that God is going to be number one for them, too.
Huh.
Well, he's sounding a lot like an extraterrestrial himself, actually. Maybe.
Thank you!
Well, because here's the thing. What I read is that actually the aliens created Christianity, and in fact all the world religions.
Oh, in chariots order, of the God.
I guess.
Yeah.
In order to, and you know, through their slow revelations of themselves, they are actually bringing to fruition the prophecies of Christianity. In other words, Jesus is going to come back, but it's going to be aliens, because they already know that we're expecting the returning of Christ, right? So they're going to come back.
So they're going to assume that
they're going to create miracles. Yeah, they're going to create miracles. Come in the form of Jesus, and then all the Christians are going to be, all the evangelicals are going to go, oh my God, now is the second coming, and they're just going to give away the entire store.
Yeah, but everybody else is going to be really bummed.
Well, you know, there's a
question. They've created, you know, a lot of dissension with this Christian stuff.
No, that's absolutely true. And
with any religion, because not everybody is into it.
There's a serious cost.
They better get
fail.
Into it real quick.
Well, apparently so. But I just keep thinking of that TV show V. Remember? And then they came down, and then how do we know that the aliens haven't come and just assumed? Okay, now
I'm we did have this interview with Jack Sarfati, and people will want to. And he thinks, you know, several of them are here, traveling through. I can't remember. He has his parallel universes, probably.
There you go, see?
Time travel or what have you.
So people are questioning, well, why is the Vatican stepping up, and is this an expansion of their view, or are they just trying to appear to be open-minded in case they land? And then they can say, see, we knew. We were so hip to this already. So that's a question.
And they just feel confident that there are extraterrestrials because of the scientific evidence that there are so many suns and so many planets that are within the correct distance from the sun. I mean, there is, you know, the general scientific paradigm, if you'll excuse that word, has gone from, you know, it's unlikely to it's likely that somewhere out there, you know, there are things leading lives as we understand it.
Well, exactly. People are
But not reading Bibles.
Some people are questioning, well, will we be able to recognize them when they get here, or will it be a lot like the Aztec world? Is it going to be, we think, you know, we're going to be Montezuma all over again when we see Cortez? Are we going to think, oh, it's the second coming, or is it we're going to be giving away the farm, as Jeff so succinctly put it earlier.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the case. I mean, I don't see it as evil if they want to eat us, you know, any more than, you know, well, some people might argue with me that, you know, if I want to eat a chicken, maybe that's real evil, but, you know, that's kind of the way it goes in the cosmic food chain. You know, we could be pretty low on the
totem pole. We could burn hors d'oeuvre, is what you're saying. The great cocktail party of life.
I think I'd make a pretty good egg.
You'd be a tasty treat on a stick for somebody.
I'd be dessert. I like to think of myself as dessert. We're here on the phone with Mark Lehner and Billy Goldberg, the authors of the authoritative medical book, Why Do Men Have Nipples, which is currently at number 53 on Amazon.com. And Mark Lehner is the author of what I consider the funniest novel of the 1990s, Et Tu, Babe, and several other hilarious novels like I Smell Esther Williams and My Cousin, My Gastroenterologist. His co-author described him thusly: he had the heavily muscled torso of a Bulgarian weightlifter and a weepy histrionic temperament of a teenage girl. And said co-author, Billy Goldberg, is an emergency medical physician on faculty at a New York City teaching hospital. And presumably, Dr. Goldberg is not allowed near any actual patients now that everybody knows about his association with this monster, Mark Lehner. So welcome, guys.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Great introduction.
I hope
I would like to
it.
Say that I've written some hilarious stuff also. I don't know if you've ever read The Epidemiology of Cervical Spine Injuries.
I so love
that. Was
that.
New?
Oh my, no one, well, you wrote that under a pseudonym, didn't you?
You know, people don't read the medical literature enough. There's some funny stuff out there.
I left it. I left until snot came out of my nose.
He
that's
did.
What I, that's the question I forgot that I was going to ask. Why does snot come out of your nose when you laugh?
Well, at least you weren't drinking milk.
Yeah, why does milk come through? Yeah, can you explain that?
We talk a lot about snot.
I noticed that.
I think all of us have always been interested in snot and mucus of all kinds. We realized at some point in our research, which was done in a top secret facility, by the way, in a former Soviet biological research center.
Nice.
But we realized that snot, mucus, is like the universal solvent in the body. So there are a bunch of mucus questions answered. I wanted Billy to tell you what about his last Mexican lecture, though, because that had a nice title too. Did it have a whole title?
No, it was Causticos. It was about caustic ingestion. So I'm really on the comedy circuit everywhere.
Caustic injection.
Caustic ingestion. So people who swallow lye or drain cleaner.
I thought it was like people who swallow caustic commentary or something.
Yes,
like
I thought
that.
It was just, you know, taking in surly data.
Yeah. So, in the interest of snot, you guys actually have a formula for making mucus. How did you come across that?
My wife is really wonderful with that. She had an aunt. Her aunt Rhoda has every little game to entertain children, and she was the the one who introduced me to making snot. So it's an old family recipe. It's
you should have
my
dinner
wife's
at
family.
Billy's house sometime.
Yeah, it does sound nice, tasty.
A big pot of homemade snot-like gumbo, and it's fantastic.
I was thinking, this could be a pretty enjoyable formula if you could make really large amounts of it and leave it in places and so forth.
Well, there are presumably people who don't produce enough snot. I guess there's a market. When I years ago when I used to write ads for medical companies and pharmaceutical companies, there was a company that made artificial saliva, which always fascinated me. But there is a need for it because there are drugs that inhibit the production of saliva and dry mouth caused by certain diseases, et cetera. So I wouldn't be surprised if someday there'll be a market for artificial snot too. And we're way ahead of the game on that one, I think.
You guys should
start. We could win one of those Ig Nobel awards. Have you heard about those Ig Nobel awards?
I love those. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I emailed Mark about this guy who made these fake testicles for dogs, the nudicles.
I read about
neutered
that.
Dogs, which is really fabulous.
And who wouldn't want to have some
who wouldn't
surgery?
Wear a pair of fake dog testicles, just even next to their own?
Really, or under the chin, or just about anywhere.
Right.
It's a new
Mark,
fashion.
Mark, you want to swap yours out for a pair of fake dog testicles?
No.
This could become very popular in certain subcultural areas right in San Francisco, I think.
You know, Mr. R, you serious, and I have known each other over the years. I guess you know that by now.
Who are you speaking to? I'm having a weird recursive experience.
I'm just musing out loud.
Yeah,
all right,
exactly.
Go on. I'm sorry. I'm ruining the whole conceit of this conversation as an interview, right?
Absolutely. That's we're very conceited about this. Actually, Mark, I have found myself wondering what you were up to over the last few years. I think the last novel was Tetherballs in Bougainville.
Right. I've renounced all my novels on religious grounds, and now Billy actually is not only my friend but my spiritual mentor. So I'm on a whole new path now.
Oh, so he's taken away from these evil novels, and yet I somehow knew you would be thinking about nipples.
I've taken you away from quality literature and brought you towards, what was the review on Amazon that I'm so obsessed with? The guy who called it mindless pablum. I hate being insulted and having to get a dictionary out to look up what somebody's saying about me.
This person might not know that a pablum actually does not have brain cells, any pablum.
See.
You know.
Do you mind if I stick something in? Because one of the things I love about this this whole endeavor with Billy is promoting the book. Since you mentioned our ranking on a list, we are and have been for, I think, 10 weeks now, number one on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah.
In our books category. So I just want to make sure that I want to proclaim that to all.
Absolutely.
All of your,
because, I mean, there's definitely a herd-like thing that goes on there, and now that everybody knows it's number one, still more people will have to go out and
get it. Important. I think it's important to keep it number one. I think it's a crusade.
It could be like Dark Side of the Moon. It could like stay there for like 8 years or something.
Or maybe it could go beyond number one.
That's right.
The mentioning crusade does take us back to our earlier conversation.
You know, I met Billy. You didn't ask me this question, but I'm going
to
answer it.
Tell it, brother.
You want to hear how I met my nipple
Absolutely.
Brother, Billy Goldberg?
Absolutely.
We were working on a TV show together called Wonderland that was on ABC.
I loved ABC
Wonderland. Disney, to be precise.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty great show, I have to say, a show that would have fared better had it been on cable, but I think it was a little dark and
isn't it
harrowing.
Being rerun on Trio? No, on Logo.
It had this weird chick who like worked in a shop of some sort.
An inanimate object spoke to her.
Yeah, I did see it once. Anyway,
very
go
cool.
on.
I don't know about any of this, but
Wait, who is this again?
So Billy was the medical. I was writing some of the episodes. Billy was a medical consultant on the show. And we got to be friends and spent a miraculously wild, bizarre, and inspiring and enchanted night together in the emergency room where Billy was working and continues to work. And Billy had this idea for this book, I think, for years, because as a doctor, he is accosted daily, I think, by questions and accosted by people dropping their pants and lifting their shirts and showing him all sorts of oozing lesions and sores and rashes and crusty, superating phenomenon.
This is a way of life. I think Diana
I have a really good imagination.
I just got myself so excited I had to stop talking.
No, but this also happens to me, and I can't understand why people always want to lift their shirts, and
themselves.
Anyway, I've had some questions about different medical things. One of the things that's concerning me is the bird flu, and I'm wondering if washing down Pop Rocks with Coke would be a cure for the bird flu.
We need a good cure for the bird flu. So, I mean, if Pop Rocks could cure all our ills, that would be so great. I'd love to do a commercial also. You know how they add on all these medical side effects?
Yes.
It'd be, like, great if they had a commercial for Pop Rocks like that. You know, with side effects include excessive flatulence and, you know, and stuff like that. But, the flu is real. You know, it's always been there. And, you know, I don't think there's anything we're going to do to prevent, you know, some sort of pandemic in the future. So
aren't all
stay away from ill poultry.
Are all flus I think I read this somewhere. All flus originate in birds. Is that not true?
I was hearing that, I think, on the news the other night, but I may have been hallucinating.
I read it in Time magazine.
Come on, you know it's true.
So just stay away from poultry. Well,
actually, Billy is concerned about the avian flu. We talk about it frequently. I mean,
I'm concerned about everything. I'm just too neurotic to exist.
You're a worrier. How could you work in the ER and not be worried about everything? I don't even think that has anything to do with it. I think you were worried about everything as a kid.
Did you spend
long before you worked in the ER?
Did you
mind
spend?
If we have a conversation here.
You guys go ahead. You guys go ahead and talk to each other. We're just here to listen and
so
pick up the jewels of.
It's
wisdom.
Actually what we love to do. That's why that section in the book, the instant messages. That's what we really did. We wrote those. Are not edited. We just kind of went, and that's what the way Mark and I communicated.
There's more. Don't you guys think that's an interesting new literary form? The IMing.
The IMing, yeah. I mean, I did a book that used email, but it wasn't that kind of IM stuff. And it's, you know, it's kicking it old school, too, in a way. Yeah.
Kicking old school is right.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're kicking it old school. I never thought anyone would say that about me, but I like that.
Yeah, well, it needs to be said because it hasn't been said in a long time because it was such a cliche, but it just, like, popped out of my mouth. And
I haven't heard it since the unveiling of my grandmother's headstone, actually.
Grandma kicked it old school?
She kicked it over, man. You know, I was wondering, that one of the questions was, can you take the tetracycline meant for fish tanks? And first of all, my first thought was, hey, I didn't know that shit could get you high. And second of all, like, what kind of cocktail parties do you guys go to? I've never heard anybody ask that question. Is that a frequent question that comes up?
That was actually based on a lady came into the emergency room. I was working in Los Angeles at a county hospital in Los Angeles, and some lady came in, and she brought in the package, and she said, I have this rash on my head, and I've been taking this. Is this the right thing to do? And, you know, I think I actually tell the story in the book, but she also had covered the rash on her head with toothpaste. So, you know, this woman did not have all the medical skills necessary to care for herself. But it turns out she basically, what was that, Mark?
Toothpaste and zits.
Didn't this woman just come out with her own book, The Natural Cures They Don't Want You to Know About? I think that's someone else.
That guy is quite a piece of work.
Yeah.
Tell him the story about that woman who came in and said something like, I think I might have been picking at this part of my face a little too much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that woman, I think I talk about that in the book also. One day I'm walking around, and, you know, this is at Bellevue, and I go into the back room, the suture room, and this woman has this bandage over her jaw, and I said, you know, introduce myself, and I, you know, asked her what the problem is. She was very embarrassed. She's like, you know, I was, you know, I had this thing on my face, and I think I got carried away. And I said, don't worry, you know, we see a lot of stuff. And she pulls back the bandage, and her, like, a good, you know, 4-inch section of her jawbone is actually exposed. She's picked down to her jawbone. And, you know, you try and, you know, keep your composure, but it was just one of those things where, like, okay, you know, I can understand why you wouldn't want to pick your face like that. Really, it's a surreal place. You can't make up some of the stuff that you see in the emergency room.
It's an amazing place.
How do you maintain your composure?
This isn't a censored sort of thing, is it?
No, absolutely not. Say anything you want. A string of expletives would be welcome.
RU knows from my books and stuff, sort of my predilections, but then meeting Billy was such a wonderful thing because just in the course of every day, sort of his everyday vocation, I mean, it was just 2 weeks ago. This sounds like the voiceover over some beautiful little now dissolve to the past. It was just 2 weeks ago. No, that Billy was telling, you know, we were talking in the morning, and he said, the craziest thing happened last night in the ER. I said, what? And he said, I pulled a hard-boiled egg out of some guy's ass. And it's a great story.
Yeah,
of course it's a great story, right? It just it brings up so many different questions. About
It's hard to pick one.
Well, pick one. Go on. Actually,
we should. We're going to take a break for a moment and hear some music, and then come back and ask Billy what's the absolute weirdest thing he ever heard, seen, heard, blah, ever bumped into in the emergency room.
Are you serious?
Volume control so that the sound can be heard in all parts of the room. Immediately following this announcement, you will see a flash and hear a beep. These should happen at the same time. Again.
Yeah, Billy, what would you say is the weirdest thing that you ever witnessed in the emergency room?
Other than meeting Mark Lehner?
Yeah, well, that could take the cake.
The second
one. Is the egg up the ass? I remember hearing about glass up people's asses from somebody who worked in the emergency room.
I've seen quite a few things in people's butts. On Christmas Eve, I was working, and I pulled two tubes of toothpaste out of a schizophrenic prisoner's butt. So that stuff doesn't change. You know, the place is so surreal that nothing fazes you. You know, Mark always asks me, he says, what happened? I was like, oh, nothing. And then I rattle off, you know, some things. But I had one very surreal experience where
Hatzola is this Hasidic volunteer ambulance corps in New York, and they brought in this patient who had gotten her arm trapped in a fish grinder, and they brought in the amputated arm and were taking care of this woman, and she's okay. I go to look at the arm, and what they usually do is they usually pack it on ice. So these group of Hasidic guys bring over this milk crate with this arm wrapped in plastic, and they didn't have any ice, and they had it wrapped, surrounded by these frozen chickens. And that was just one of the most bizarre, surreal thing with these, six, Orthodox Jewish guys surrounding me as I, take frozen chickens out and examine this amputated arm. It was very, very bizarre.
Well, I can see why Lehner has decided to give up on fiction and rather hang out with you, because it's pretty hard to top that.
Well,
we should get a report from you monthly.
I haven't completely. But can you believe the success of this book? I mean, it's so fabulous. Billy, Billy and I have been talking about this because we've been talking about other projects we're going to do and different ways to sort of manage the great, complicated and majestic business of Nipples Incorporated that we've got going. But the book has been a remarkable commercial success, and I think it's because it is, and I'm being earnest about this, so imbued with our relationship, with our friendship, and it was the whole provenance, the whole origin of the book was in our kind of taking delight in each other this one night when I'm witness to all of the crazy things Billy sees. And So the book is such a complete collaboration between the two of us, and I think frequently things that people think I wrote, Billy actually wrote.
I assume that
Billy, in addition to being incredible and incredibly compassionate and caring physician, which I've seen, is a wonderful painter and has a studio filled with enormously fascinating original paintings. Completely unprecedented sorts of paintings. So,
Mark, maybe you should tell them what? The other thing that we've been keeping from people. That book, Et Tu, Babe?
Yeah.
I wrote that.
We knew that.
I suspected as much. When I saw Lehner, staring at the space.
I actually feel guilty. I feel bad because I feel like I'm the person who, corrupted Mark Lehner, this extremely talented comic genius, and I got him writing silly nipple books. So I'm going to be vilified in the literary world.
Look, everybody, all the major major writers and so forth have been wondering about lighting farts their entire lives, probably.
And yeah, listen, ever since this happened to me, Billy's been getting calls from, everyone. Jonathan Franzen, David Foster Wallace, Rick Moody, they all want to collaborate with Goldberg now. it's such a gold mine. Obviously. So.
I mean, the moment you get nipples into the title, I think you probably know that you have a winner.
Yeah, we need a title for the next book. So if anyone out there has a stroke of genius, we're willing to take any suggestions.
Stroke of genius. I think I'm getting a thought here, but it might. I don't know. It might.
Percutaneous
stroke. Might of genius. Might are you concentrating work. On the stroke part?
I'm concentrating on the stroke part. But
why do dogs have nudicles?
that would be good. Somebody once commented that any song with the word underpants in it should automatically be a hit. I don't know if underwear is. I don't think it would work as a book title.
Given that. So name one hit song that had the word underpants in it.
There aren't any. I actually wrote a song, and that's why the person thought that it would be a hit, because it did have the word underpants in it. But it wound up going nowhere. So
Billy, can you tell us a little bit about your art and what you're currently working on? Do you have a canvas sitting on an easel right now? Is it half finished?
I have. I just got kicked out of my old studio. I was in the meatpacking district in New York, which has now become the chicest place
very
in America.
Very chic-y now.
Oh, yeah.
So I used to go down there 10 years ago, and it would be me and a bunch of transvestite hookers, and now it's a bunch of screaming young kids. So I got booted out of that studio. So I'm moving, and I just was there this afternoon trying to start some new stuff. But I have a kind of this caricature portrait of these two kids hanging upside down that I'm desperately trying to finish.
Very cool. Can you maybe send a photo of it? We'll post it on the site when it's done.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well,
that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I love that. I particularly love that painting.
So,
that's not the one where you remember that's not the painting that we sat in front of for all those hours, and I said, maybe you should put like one little thing over there, and then you made like two little things. I said, no. It's ruined.
And I ruined it. You made me ruin the whole thing with one stroke of the brush.
One brush stroke, I said.
Yeah, don't collaborate on paintings. It just,
it just turns into this big paint fight that's just covered in vermilion.
It's just wrong. So has anybody asked new questions of you? Are the people dissatisfied that you didn't answer their favorite question?
We have a big, beautiful, fascinating new book planned that we're working on, and we have which is different from the first, but as much fun, and I hope and as informative. And Billy's got tons of questions. I've contributed a couple of interesting ones, and we're gonna have all sorts of enhanced and energetic, elaborate IMing in the new one. But yeah, we have all kinds of stuff. I mean, I think we thought when we put this book together that it's sort of everything anyone ever, in the middle of the night wondered about their own, loins and armpits and heartbeats and scalps, and we just had everything anyone ever pondered about their own bodies. But there's so much more.
There's always more.
That we've discovered that this book just was, the book's been sort of catalytic in that respect, and it's provoked so many more really fascinating questions that we've come across and that people have given us. So anyone out there, though, that has questions and would like to be included in this new book, please send them our
to
way.
Our website.
There's a website.
The website.
Whydomenhavenipples.com. Very clever.
You guys, I can send them to you guys, and you can get them to us. But we're open. We're open and open and ready.
You guys could do like an Andy Weil thing, and do infomercials about this stuff. Who the heck knows? I was particularly interested in is it Gelastic seizures or Gelastic seizures? This idea that people just laugh incessantly.
Yeah, it's gelastic seizures. So it's
can we hire
all
these
they
guys?
Do is laugh.
Can we hire some of these people?
What are kind gelastic seizures? What's that word? Gelastic.
It's laughter. It's they just laugh, and that's the form of their seizure. But the brain is amazing. We were talking the other day. Mark and I were talking about this famous story about Phineas Gage. I don't know if anyone's. And knows that story.
Mm-hmm.
But he was this, Mark, he was an iron worker or a railroad worker?
Phineas Gage was a foreman of a railroad construction crew in Cavendish, Vermont. I've always loved this story. And he was using a tamping iron. He's pounding down some explosive to do some little bit of demolition and putting a railroad down. Railway, and it exploded, and it shot this big, I think it's like a 3-foot, fairly thick rod through his head. It entered through one, like a cheekbone, and exited through the top of his skull. And he was relatively okay. I think he had a very brief kind of seizure. I don't even know if he lost consciousness, but was a completely changed man. He had been a very conscientious, decorous, careful kind of person, and after this accident became this profane, swearing, intolerant, belligerent,
pugnacious,
you know, guy who was just this swaggering, horrible asshole. And it was the interesting thing about this case is that it was one of the beginning. It precipitated some of the original insights into the brain being the seat of our personality. You know, there were times until fairly recently, within the past 100 or 150 years, that people thought that the personality resided somehow in the same, you know, vague nether regions of our existences as the soul or our heart. Mm-hmm. You know, and this was one of the first things that showed people that, you know, we behave the way we do, and our personalities are construed the way they are because of our brains. It's a great, great story. So there's all sorts of stuff actually that's going to be in the new book, but it's one of our great stories.
Yeah, behavior is definitely one of the funnier and stranger aspects of any medical story. People who, for instance, there are people who can't see other people's faces. They can see everything about them, but they can't perceive people's faces. Or there are people who can't see their own body parts and so forth.
Right. Or there are people who disown their own limbs, who don't recognize their limbs as being part of their own body and try to get rid of them. You know, sort of toss them away. The first night I met Billy, there was a guy. I mean, I don't know if this changed his behavior, changed my behavior. There was a, and we talk about this in Why Do Men Have Nipples. A guy who came in with a meat cleaver embedded in his head.
Right.
He had gotten into a fight with a fellow chef at a Chinese restaurant, I guess, presumably in Chinatown, and this was the end result of the dispute. And sort of walked in and. With an enormous equanimity, you know, this shocking equanimity, just sort of walked in. Not hard to diagnose what his problem was.
Did he take a seat in the waiting room? Well, I'm afraid we're actually reaching the end of our time here, but we want to have you guys back when your next book comes out.
We'll come back whenever. I think it's appropriate that we end with a meat cleaver in the head. Story because
absolutely and Mr. Lehner, one more question. Any novels coming up?
I have a book that it's kind of long overdue book that I'm writing for Little Brown, and I've been writing a bunch of scripts and different things, and I'll get to all that, but I really have to say that in almost every way as an artist and as a human being, this Why Do Men Have Nipples enterprise has been probably the most, and my collaboration with Billy has been the most delightful thing I've ever done.
All right. Well, congratulations to both of you.
And thanks to Penny.
It's very much fun, and we'll be talking to you soon.
All right. Thanks for having us.
All right. Take care.
We would like to thank Mark Lehner and Billy Goldberg for joining us on the show today. Our gang of three was Are You Serious, Diana Brown, and me, Jeff Deal. You also heard Can't You Hear Biz Knockin' by DJ BC. Next week, our guest will be Trademark G of the Evolution Control Committee. The Are You Serious show was part of the Mondo Globo Network. Subscribe to all of our shows at mondoglobo.net. Thanks for listening, and don't be afraid of the dark.